And as you know, the Pro Store is now stacked.
Expanding.
Yeah. We have three designs in there now, so you can use the 15 bucks, stinky bucks, for anything you like. All you need to do is put your name in an email and send it to contest@wetalkgames.com. That's
how
simple.
Can't get any easier.
If you get this wrong, then you lose. And even if you put a wrong name in, we'll still count it.
Very good.
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Well, enter now.
Right enter now. Now and often, although even if you do enter often, it'll only be counted once.
Correct.
Once per household, but enter as often as you like. It Kyle, stay on the line, and we'll bring you back in for the forum.
I'll be holding my breath.
Right on. Kyle Von Kubik of We Talk Games and Heroes of Gravitron. Eric Alex chipping in, and also TT, thank you very much for that. Hey, man, let's get Hawaii on the line. Let's do this. Hank Rogers. Oh, this is exciting for me. Joining us from the most beautiful place on the planet Earth, Hawaii. Hawaii, go. The handsome Hank Rogers. Hank, thanks for being on the show today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're... One of the reasons we're having you on is because you're the most buff man in video game entertainment today.
Buff?
Yeah.
Now, how would you know that?
I saw you in that great BBC documentary, Tetris from Russia with Love.
Yeah, but I didn't show any of my non-existent abs in that interview.
Maybe they airbrushed them on later in post. I don't know their technology there. We thought it would be great to have you on for our listeners because of your pivotal involvement with the video game drama of intrigue that Tetris was, and to help celebrate the 25th anniversary of Alexei Pajitnov's Tetris. But before we delve into that, I'm very interested in clearing up a bit of the history of BPS, because I know that you used to be involved with Bulletproof Software, and I later found out that you started that in Japan. And now you have Blue Planet Software, both BPS. You evidently wanted to save on the monogram towels. So can you tell us a little bit about how Bulletproof and Blue Planet all came about?
Okay, so I was in Japan in 1983 when personal computers that were able to play games first came out.
All right.
And I decided that I would follow my college passion, which is playing Dungeons and Dragons, and my major, which was computer science. And I made the first role-playing game in 83. I tried to find a publisher. It was unsuccessful. Well, actually, SoftBank, at the time, a distributor of computer games and computer software, told me, you know, all you need to do is have your wife answer the phone, make your own company. So at the time, Japanese companies were snapping up acronyms like ASCII, or login, or whatever, for names of companies, or magazines.
Right.
And BPS is still not taken, that's bits per second.
Yep.
And I thought that would be a lasting acronym, and it's still, in fact, people still talk about BPS. I picked Bulletproof Software because I thought I was going to do business software, which I never did. That's Bulletproof Software. I wrote the first couple of games. It was the number one game in 1984, and then I realized I couldn't program day and night like I did when I was younger. And I started traveling around the world looking for games to bring to Japan.
I see.
And so I'd travel to London, to Chicago, to Vegas. And it was in Vegas in 1988 at the Consumer Electronics Show that I first saw Tetris.
Right, right. And I'll catch people up a little bit on what all went down if they're not familiar with the drama. It's 1984, Iron Curtain, Cold War, Communist Russia, it's all happening, it's all still in full effect. Out of Moscow's Computer Center, which was a very serious, military-oriented, space-oriented, number-crunching computer think tank organization, comes Alexei Pajitnov's Digital Pentominoes-inspired puzzle game. It's distributed underground, overground, but only within Russia, and, you know, this is all property of state. There's no capitalism involved here. Robert Stein sees this in a Hungarian machine in the back room somewhere, and he brokers the game to Marisoft. The Russian government agency LORG steps in. They contact Stein and Marisoft and inform them that they've been selling their game illegally. Stein gets LORG to sign off on licensing for the game for the Mac and the PC. Marisoft approaches Atari Tengen for video game console release and distribution. In 1988, you see Tetris running at an Atari booth at a tech show, and you secure the Japanese PC and Japanese video game distribution rights for Tetris. Somewhere along the line, though, Alorg wasn't getting their royalties. And then in 1989, Nintendo was getting ready to launch their Game Boy, and they wanted Tetris as a pack-in. And what were your connections at the time to Nintendo that they knew to come to you to, as like a broker or whatever you would consider yourself? How did they know to come to you?
Well, I was the one who brought Tetris to Nintendo in Japan as a publisher first.
Right, right.
And so Nintendo Japan, by that time, they knew me very well. I had a personal relationship with Mr. Yamauchi in Japan. But also I had a relationship with Nintendo of America at the time because... of all things, I sold them 2 million joysticks.
Oh.
It was, a side business. I'm not in the hardware business, but they bought them, and I had somebody manufacture them, and it worked out. So I became good friends with Mr. Arakawa, and it was with Mr. Arakawa that I negotiated the deal for the packing of Tetris on Game Boy. At the time, it was really fuzzy because there were a lot of people claiming that they had rights and they had connections and so on and so forth. In fact, I had a letter of intent for various platforms of Tetris, which it turned out the people that tried to sell them to me didn't actually have those rights.
Right.
So I said I would get on a plane, I would go to Moscow, and that's exactly what I did in February of 1989.
And you went to Moscow during a time when communism was in full effect. This was a socialist government. This was not a free market or enterprise or anything like this. There was a lot of mistrust of foreigners. And you just show up without an appointment. I find this just an amazing bit of this drama. I mean, it's such a thick mystery. But
two things help me here. One is my passion for computer games, and this was just for me another adventure game, you know, going there, talk to such and such a person, get such and such a hint, and then go someplace else, talk to another person. So I was in the game.
That's amazing.
But the other thing was I was just naive. I didn't know what you weren't supposed to do, so I went there on a tourist visa, knocked on the door, and I mean, those guys collectively choked because nobody knocks on the door.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was an investigation afterwards as to how the hell did I manage to get into the country and knock on that door? Because, you know, I'm not supposed to do any... I don't have the right to knock on doors if I'm in Moscow.
Sure.
But I did.
Especially a company that specialized in science, computer number crunching for space and war type of projects.
They were the designated ministry for exporting software, which in their entire history, I don't think all of the rest of the business that they did amounted to the amount of business they did with Tetris.
Oh, sure, sure. Now, you had originally tried to go through Robert Stein to get the license rights for the Game Boy, but then when you felt like he was giving you the runaround, he wasn't returning your calls, you decided to get on a plane, you went to Moscow yourself, you talked to Nikolai Belikov, and Nikolai Belikov accepted your offer for the console and handheld rights. And this ended up getting Nikolai Belikov in a little bit of hot water with the Russian government.
Well, Nikolai Belikov was, in the short term, he was in a little bit of hot water, and the hot water was that Kevin Maxwell, who's the son of Robert Maxwell, if you remember him, he is the owner of the Mirror Group, who spent $5 billion of his employees' pension funds and jumped off the boat.
Yeah.
So at that time, Kevin Maxwell was in Moscow, and the same week that I was there, saying, give me the rights to Game Boy Tetris. And so they were trying to, backdoor me.
Sure.
And his method of operation was, you will listen to me because I've got the Politburo in my pocket. I mean, my dad wrote Gorbachev's memoirs. You know, if you know what's good for you. In fact, his dad had KGB connection, for Christ's sake.
Wow.
It turned out that he burned a KGB for a pile of dosh at the end of the day. I mean, he didn't just lose his employees' money. He also lost a bunch of KGB money. At that time, a serious pressure came from the Politburo onto Mr. Belikov. What the hell are you doing? And to the point where nobody in his ministry or in the Lower Elektronik Technika, that was the name of the ministry, was talking to him. He was like a dead man.
Mm-hmm.
and he managed to get through it. So I got to give him credit for that. You know, he stuck it through because it was a, you know, it was perestroika and glasnost, and Gorbachev has said, you know what, I want people to go and start businesses and do things, you know, in a different way, not just, you know, political pressure from the top. And he took that to heart and got away with it.
And I think it comes through in the documentary that it was the fact that you were coming at it from a more honest approach. And you also befriended Alexei. How did that come about?
So I walked into a lodge and I met somebody coming down the stairs. Turned out that was Mr. Belikov. I said, I'd like to meet with some people from a lodge to talk about the licensing Tetris for Game Boy. And I showed him my Nintendo 8-bit Japanese box, and he said, he looked at it and said, we never licensed Tetris on a console, by the way. And I'm like choking, you know. Shoot, here I am in Soviet Union. I'm pirate number one of their intellectual property. What are they going to do, send me to a gulag? Anyway, the next day, there was a meeting, and I made it the next day because I figured they needed to get whoever they needed to get into the room. Otherwise, I would be talking to the wrong people. And in that next meeting, Alexei was there. And guess what? I mean, a room full of commies and two game designers. I mean, we had something to talk about immediately.
Sure, sure.
I don't think Alexei had ever met a game designer from another country before. And so we immediately hit it off.
Fantastic. Tetris and the Game Boy, I mean, how perfectly did those two technologies go together?
Oh, that was perfect. I mean, you can't imagine a better coupling. I mean, Game Boy made Tetris, and Tetris made Game Boy. Nintendo and I have been best friends ever since as a result of that deal. 30 million packed-in copies of Tetris on Game Boy.
In fact, with that black and white Game Boy, the original four tones, I guess it was, I don't think there's any better title, except maybe Faceball 2000.
Oh my gosh! How did you dig that one up?
I remember reading the mags, and I mean that had a lot of play. That was a really pushed title by a lot of the video game mags at the time, and that was under the BPS label as well.
Well, it was the problem with it is Nintendo went with the wrong, what do you call it, cable. Their docking system was to have a little hub in the middle between four Game Boys, and you all plug into the hub. And what the hub did was send an interrupt to all the Game Boys and say, give me information now. And so you get this interrupt happening, I don't know how many times per second. Well, it slowed the game down ridiculously. We had our own system, which was a daisy chain system, which said, basically, when you get a signal from the guy to your left, you process it, then you send it off to the guy to your right. And this daisy chain system meant that you could have, I don't know, 10 people in a circle all playing the same game.
Wow.
Much faster than with the little stupid hub. And so multiplayer games just never took off on Game Boy as a result.
Yeah, it was pretty much limited to two, I think. That was the most you could get out of that. You also had a lot of other very prominent titles, including one of my favorite games for the Super Famicom. And I have no idea why this has never been brought to the virtual console or at least some other platform, and that is Tetris Battle Gaiden.
Tetris Battle Gaiden is very interesting. You know, we tried to make a Tetris game for gamers, mm-hmm. by adding magic items. And magic items, there were six or seven different characters you could play, and each character had two attack items and two defense items. And so who you played against who, you know, so it would change the way the game gets played.
Oh, yeah.
Those magic items resurfaced. A lot of those magic items resurfaced in Korea when NHN or Hangame did Tetris on online, up to six players.
Okay.
And again, there are magic items involved, and you capture the magic item, then you get to use them against one of the other five players. So that those ideas are not gone. They're just sleeping a little bit. And it was a kind of a core game because, you know, for an ordinary person like a housewife who, you know, by the way, that's our core demographic, that's a lot of stuff to remember.
Right,
you know,
right.
Quick remember is no problem, but the simplicity of Tetris, you know, that you don't have to remember things that are not happening on the screen at the moment. I mean, that is the beauty of the game. So the magic items, yes, they are they appeal to gamers, but that's a smaller subset of our core demographic or our core player.
I see. And now I do see that that EA is involved. How is that relationship working out?
Oh, it's great. You know, I'm pretty good at relationships. I'm still good friends with Nintendo after having worked with them for 20 years. I mean, that's what business is all about, is creating and maintaining relationships. What happened was, around 2001, actually, I was looking for a licensee for mobile phones, and the numbers that I was getting out of the U.S. market were kind of ridiculously small. I mean, like, more than an order of magnitude smaller than the deals that I was pulling out of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, there's something wrong here. People just don't get what's going to happen, because it was already happening in Japan.
Right.
So I said, well, shoot, you know, if people don't get it collectively, that means there's a business opportunity. And I started my own company. And at that time, here in Hawaii, I started a company called Blue Lava Wireless. And it was a company making games for mobile phones. 3 years into it, we had the number one game in the space, and Jamdat had gone public. You know Jamdat?
I've heard of them, yes. I remember seeing their logo on a lot of my mobile games.
Yeah, so Jamdat went public, and basically all the money they had and all the stock they could give me, they gave me so they could get my company and Tetris.
I see.
What they actually got was a 15-year license to Tetris. And then a year into that, well, they bought my company. A year into that, Electronic Arts bought them, and so Electronic Arts became our licensee.
Oh, very good. Fantastic. Great.
That's a big fish eating a small a medium-sized fish eating a small fish, and then a gigantic fish eating a medium-sized fish.
Well, that's quite fitting, I guess, if you're surrounded by fish. And with that, is there anything big on the horizon?
Yeah, well, you know, by the way, when I look outside my office here, what I'm looking at is Honolulu Harbor. I see Aloha Tower, and I see a horizon to die for out my window. Mm-hmm. And what I see on that horizon is I see professional Tetris players, or professional video game players. And I think Tetris, because of the way it has evolved, most video games have come and gone and are but memories. Tetris has been around for 25 years now.
Yeah.
And so it's taken on a different existence from other video games. And so I think it's the first virtual sport. So we're expecting to have Tetris Cups in the future, mm-hmm. You know, a few times a year or maybe every weekend like the PGA, and then have professional Tetris players duke it out and have it be, you know, hopefully someday in the Olympics, because it is a sport. It's a competitive activity,
mm-hmm.
And why shouldn't mental activity fall into that category?
Yeah, agreed. That's something I think we always try to focus on We Talk Games. At least I hope that we do. How what we once considered traditional classical video gaming has truly blurred any lines to what it was once associated with and now has become part of the human condition. And I always find it an incredible pleasure when I find out new things via these interviews that I had no idea about before. When I always thought about Hank Rogers, I thought, you know, here's this really, really friendly, outgoing, and honest salesman, if you will, but to know that you came up into the video game industry via a passion for video game programming, and you actually programmed yourself, made a lot of games, made a lot of successful games, and now continue that passion, trying to bring great titles to the rest of the world. That's when I truly understand I am involved with something special. So thank you, Hank Rogers, for being a part of We Talk Games. Tell Al Harrington I said hello, and thank you again for joining.
That's way before my time. I've only lived here seven years.
Okay.
All right. Well, but I'll find him and I'll say hello to him for you.
Say hello. Right on, man.
Okay.
Thank you so very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, and aloha from Hawaii.
Bye now.
Bye.
That man is handsome. No doubt about it. And I can't go on enough about him. I mean, Hawaii, Tetris Battle Gaiden, going to Russia, just like, I'm going there. It's just, it's this it writes itself. It's amazing stuff. Hey, we got a new guy coming on. Let's get this guy on. Lumberton, New Jersey, go!
I gotta introduce myself, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm Wiggly Pizza, everyone.
Oh, hey, welcome to the We Talk Games.
Thanks for having me on.
What you been playing?
I've been playing the Beatles Rock Band. It is a music game for all the major systems, developed by Harmonix and MTV Games.
Yeah, I heard of this. This is like a game show, like Buzz, and it's played with Androids.
Yes, Paul McCartney's an Android.
Oh, okay, because that's what the Beatles told me anyway.